Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. You're going to be glad you did, because we've got Jim Copeland back on the show. Jim is a longtime member of our Brain Trust, the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. And he's the guy that we call on when we want to talk about legal and judicial issues. And there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on right now, folks. Jim Copeland, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
It's good to have you back. Jim, tell the audience why, when you look at Lady Justice, whose image is all over our country, in courthouses, on legal documents, in so many places, this iconic image, why are her eyes covered?
Well, her eyes are covered as a symbol of her blindness. And, of course, blindness doesn't mean she's literally blind and can't see. What it means is that she's indifferent to the parties before her. So what judges are tasked to do is really treat the rich and the poor the same, treat defendants and plaintiffs the same, in terms of not go into the case with a preconceived bias that one side or the other has a right to win, rather to apply the law and the facts in a given case. And that's the sort of even-handed rule of law all of us would want if we didn't know which side we were going to be on going into it. And so right. that's the basic rule of blind justice that dates back at least as far as ancient Greece, that's been imported into our Western legal system.
Well, exactly, right up through the common law and our legal system, which is clear that we consider it to be the best in the world. So, Jim, if two parties are before the court, and one is dressed very well and looks very successful and highly educated, and the other one is dressed very poorly and is not so highly successful and doesn't necessarily seem to be very well educated, the blindfold is there so that the court won't be unduly impressed with the very prosperous looking person and rule in that direction, or be very sympathetic to the other person and rule in their favor. It works both ways, right?
That's how it's supposed to work. And, of course, that's the long-standing traditional viewpoint that we've had. And substantially, it's to protect the weaker parties. Now, what you've seen over the last several decades is an inversion of that. Concurrent with a sort of deconstruction of the law itself, you've seen a sort of political substitution for this blind principle, in which certain advocates would say, well, the court should actually affirmatively work to try to help the weaker party in these sorts of cases, that
right.
The law doesn't really make a lot of sense. It's the notion of the law as a neutral arbiter is a fantasy. Therefore, we ought to really try to give a helping hand to the weaker party in these cases as part of an overall social justice paradigm.
So when
to try to change society.
So when President Obama, as a candidate and as a president, came up with the concept of judicial empathy, that wasn't his original thought then, was it?
Not at all. It's important to realize that Barack Obama was educated at Harvard Law School at a time when Harvard Law School was really at the vanguard of what's called the critical legal studies movement, which is precisely this movement that deconstructed the law, is very influenced by, say, postmodernism and other areas of the academy, and particularly at Harvard, There was an area of the law called critical race studies that really brought race issues to the forefront. And some of Barack's mentors in law school really developed this, mm-hmm. this wing of the law. So it's very much in keeping with the sort of legal education we've got. And in fairness to the president, most charitably read most of his comments. He's precisely been trying to advocate this blind justice principle. When he said he opposed Sam Alito and John Roberts, if you look carefully at what he said, he was often trying to say that in these closed cases, they were in fact tipping their hand toward the government and toward the rich, and that they weren't embracing a blind justice principle. But of course, in other cases, he certainly suggested that empathy itself should be the guiding principle, which certainly could be read in keeping with this sort of notion that the weak party gets favoritism, which also really runs counter to our tradition.
One of the things that I have, a quote that I found for him is quote, "the quality of empathy of understanding and identifying with people's hopes and struggles." And he used the word empathy. And so what you're saying is this movement is a reaction to where the courts actually may have favored the person who was well, so to speak, and who was wealthy and maybe more powerful, that kind of thing. And I know that's happened. I'm sure that's happened in the past as well. But the thing is that the president said he was going to appoint empathetic judges, and now we have an opening. Judge Souter with the Supreme Court is retiring, David Souter, and we have an opening, and he's nominated Judge Sotomayor. Sonia Sotomayor, and here's a quote from her, folks, that I've told you about on the show, and I've written about. This is when she was speaking at Berkeley. She said, "I would hope that a white Latino woman, with the richness of her experiences, would more often than not reach a better conclusion as a judge than a white male who hasn't lived that life." Now, what does that mean to you, Jim, when you hear those words?
Well, again, I think most charitably that quote can be taken as sort of an offshoot of again, a longstanding sort of legal scholarly doctrine, and that's really realist theory that developed in the 1930s, predominantly at the Yale Law School.
Some people have called that quote racist.
Well, I think there's another quote that she said that I think
Hold on to that thought, Jim. We've got to take a break. We'll come back. I'm going to get Jim to finish that thought, and I'm going to tell you about my brush, or remind you about my brush with judicial empathy in my small business. Stay with me. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassing, Small Business Advocate, and my website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for checking it out. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blassing Game. When you get to my website, please check out all the things that you have to do there. You can subscribe to my newsletter, check out my blog. Lots of stuff there that will help you in your small business. Jim Copeland is our guest. He's with the Manhattan Institute. What's that website, please?
It's www.manhattan-institute.org. Also, check out our legal web magazine with www.pointoflaw.com.
Pointoflaw.com. So check those out, folks. Good stuff there, including some of the things that Jim and his colleagues have written about the topic we're talking about, which is the concept of judicial empathy and where's the problem and why is this a problem for small business owners? Quickly, Jim, I had a brush with judicial empathy. I had a case that the judge ruled in my favor. With the person that she ruled against continued to violate a contract before we took him back to court before the same judge, a female judge. She had in the meantime discovered something that made her very sad for that family, and she changed she nullified her previous ruling and actually said, "I think this family has suffered enough." Remember, the suffering that they did had nothing to do with me or my contract. I'm sorry that it happened to them too, but it had nothing to do with the contract this man signed that he violated clearly because she'd already ruled against him once. But she now said, "I think this family has suffered enough. I'm not going to enforce this contract. Now, Jim,
I think it's a great example, Jim, of the emptiness of judicial empathy
and the potential damage it could do for small businesses.
It's damaging to small businesses, and what a lot of these judges don't understand are the second order effects of these decisions. In this individual case, the judge is sympathetic toward this individual plaintiff, therefore they're going to void a valid contract. Well, the problem is, what are we going to do to any rational small business owner in the future? The rational small business owner is going to say, well, wow, if I enter into a contract, it might not be contracting with got some sad life story. So
right.
It's going to actually make it it's going to make it rational for an employer, in this case a compete agreement as you described it to me, an employer to do extra due diligence on the people that he's hiring and say, well, wow, if he had a rough life, I can't be insured that my contract's going to be enforced with you, so
right.
maybe I'm going to give the job to somebody else.
Exactly.
So in the long run, it's not that she's trying to help.
Those are the kinds of chain reaction, unintended consequences, ladies and gentlemen, that happens when the government tries to micromanage our lives. Jim, I want to get over to the big issue, though. There's great irony right now because Judge Sotomayor, who is President Obama's judicial nominee, I say that with just a tiny bit of sarcasm, ladies and gentlemen. I admit that. But she's his nominee, and even as we speak, they're finishing up the documents on overturning of one of her rulings. Tell us about it, Jim.
Well, just Monday, this was. I think it's the seventh opinion in which she's been involved that the Supreme Court has ruled upon, and again, she was reversed here. And the thing she's reversed, I don't want to unfairly impugn her, and it's important to realize she was the junior member of a three-judge panel in the case below. Not as if she stands alone here, and this was a 5-4 Supreme Court decision, so it's not as if it's overwhelmingly obvious that she was wrong in this case.
Mm-hmm.
But the case is probably the most controversial or most prominent one that came before the court this term, and it involves a reverse discrimination claim by white firefighters in Connecticut who had passed an exam that the city had originally certified. They'd outsourced the production of this exam. An exam to assess the qualifications for captain and lieutenant promotions in the fire department.
Mm-hmm.
None of the black firefighters who took the exam were eligible based on the civil service rules for promotions. It doesn't mean that none of the black firefighters passed the exam. It means that the top 10 individuals on the list were all white with one, or there were two Hispanics on one of the lists and all white on the other list. So there was agitation in the city, and it's not clear what the motivation of the city was from the record, but what the city claimed was, we're afraid of getting sued if we certify this test by the black firefighters, so they decertified the test, and the Supreme Court said, well, that's discriminating against the white firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this isn't, I'm not saying the Supreme Court's right or wrong here. I think it was probably the right decision that the majority reached,
but Jim, I've only got a minute, but the point is, the thing is, though, is that the original ruling by Sotomayor and the other two, I guess, was that it was okay for the decommission this test. Is that right?
That's correct. And really, that's about all we know.
And therefore,
they didn't write a full opinion here. They really wrote a perfunctory summary order and then changed it into what's called a per curiam opinion that relied on the decision of the district court. So they didn't put any independent analysis of their.
One of the things, Jim, as we wrap up, that political correctness is the enemy of excellence. And empathy, judicial empathy, is the handmaiden of political correctness, in my opinion. What do you think?
I think that it depends how you define political correctness.
Empathy does not help small businesses, folks. You need to think about this as we go through. It'll be interesting. Is her quickly?
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.